used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
And the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, November 9th, 2018. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here in the studio today by my co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
And Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our assistant control room operator, Carol Davies McIntosh.
Good afternoon.
Today's episode of Animal Voices is brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series designed to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, help chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Today's show is focused on people who are helping to make plant-based food and a vegan lifestyle accessible to individuals and communities who might otherwise have trouble accessing them. Our feature interview is with Matt Noble, Executive Director of the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank. Established in 2015, the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank is a volunteer-run registered charity committed to providing vegan-friendly food to people in need in the Toronto area. That interview is coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. And we'll also listen to a couple of short features on Francesca Cheney, founder and owner of Brooklyn vegan cafe Soul Sips, and Brenda Sanders, founder and owner of Baltimore's The Greener Kitchen. Both of these women do amazing food justice work centered around vegan food, and they offer valuable insights on how to make plant-based eating accessible to everyone. But first, Allison, you had some thoughts to share with us.
Yes, well, the theme of today's show is a topic that resonates with me deeply on a personal level, and that is making good food more accessible to people who have difficulty accessing it for a number of reasons. And of course, when I say good food, I mean plant-based food that is free from animal use and exploitation, hopefully free from human exploitation, and also much more sustainable and better for the environment and for our health. Now, I think it's a difficult issue to discuss when we talk about what we'd like to see in an ideal world, right, versus what we have in society and what we face in real life, even here in Vancouver. And I feel like being able to live a vegan lifestyle, it shouldn't have to do anything with your status or your class in society or how much money you make. But unfortunately, this is not a reality for many. And I don't personally have all the answers, although I have some suggestions, but I wonder if you, Sinead and Elise, could first share your thoughts on how you feel about being able to live in a world, in an ideal world, where veganism is the norm and people who either have a very low income or no income will have access to good nourishing food that doesn't harm the planet and others.
Well, I think that's definitely really the goal, right, is to make it so that living free of exploiting animals is, like you said, accessible to everybody. I think that's so important. I think often stuff like class and it's a complicated thing because income is a big part of it, but it's not the only element. There's just a lot of different factors that go into it and that make that can make certain things difficult for certain people to access. And it's sometimes, yeah, it doesn't just have to do with income. But I think that, you know, we were talking earlier about the issue of government subsidies. You know, in most Western countries, animal products are heavily subsidized, whereas plant-based foods are not so much.
Mm-hmm. Including our country, Canada.
Exactly, yeah. So that would be a start, I think, just getting, just balancing that out a little bit more. Some countries are talking about taxing animal products and hopefully subsidizing plant-based products more. So that would help a little bit.
And what are your thoughts, Sinead, on this tricky subject?
Yeah. Well, again, I think that government subsidies is a huge thing. And, I mean, the government is subsidizing businesses that people have been buying from for decades and decades. And so, really, I think if higher income people keep buying animal products, and the government is likely to, you know, that's where the money is, then they're going to keep subsidizing it. But if there is a cultural shift, which is what we're aiming to do through this radio show and many things, is just open people's eyes to the availability and the benefits of eating plant-based foods instead, and if the government starts subsidizing those instead, then these foods will become more easily accessible to people, lower income people, because you know, you get people saying, well, I would love to go to that vegan restaurant or go get some fresh ingredients and whatever and cook something at home, but you know, I'm trying to feed my family and I'm working all day, and you know, some people just want to stop at McDonald's and get some food to put in their kids' stomachs, you know, but it's not good for them. It's, you know, that food is killing people, so it's all sorts of things, but
and killing animals too, right?
So yes, yeah.
I think that sorry, I totally just lost my thought. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. I'll think of it.
Yeah, do you want me to go forward?
Because
I'm just wondering if either of you have heard of the Welfare Food Challenge. It's a provincial program that was started, and it's not going to happen this year. So what it is, it was an annual awareness campaign that challenges British Columbians to eat on a welfare recipient's budget for a week. Mm-hmm. Last year's budget for the challenge was $19, and like I said, the challenge isn't taking place this year because for this year, the calculated food budget is only $6 a week, so it's deemed to not even be possible to do this challenge. But in reality, there's people who live off this money as their income, and this was without even taking out money for some other basic necessities that they might need, like a phone, $6 a week. So I can just only imagine how frustrating it must be for people in this situation. And I can't say that I identify with people who only have $6 a week to purchase food, I see a systemic corruption of our food systems in North America and Canada. There was a report released last month by the BC Center for Disease Control that indicated that the minimum cost for a week's worth of healthy food in 2017 would be around $68.40 for a woman and $80.40 for a man. Now, I'm not sure what kind of food this was based on, whether it was all organic or not. It seems kind of high for me, actually, because I actually get by on way less than that per week.
Too.
But anyways, I feel that, there are, you know, fruits, vegetables, and legumes are cheaper, and even without the subsidies that we don't have. Now, I want to say, I work in the housing and hospitality industry. I see so much food waste. I have been working in these industries all my life. So as a teenager, I was always seeing how food was going to waste and then how food could be diverted to other places where it was needed, right? And I feel like, you know, privileged people in our first world society, we live in a world of access and abundance when, you know, money isn't an issue for you, and perfectly good food is simply discarded. And I think this is a disgrace. I think it's immensely unfortunate that change in our societal systems here in Canada has never been made, when we have all this technology to use and where sustainability is now a buzzword that I'm hearing all the time, and progressive societies are known to embrace this. Mm-hmm. So food waste is a problem. This is unused edible food. It's a global issue. Each year, 1.3 billion metric tons, or one-third of all the food produced, one-third is thrown away. That's according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. So recovering just 25% of that wasted food could go to feed 870 million hungry people, effectively ending world hunger. So we're not even just talking about our neighborhood here in Vancouver, but everywhere. So not only does food waste use valuable resources like water, arable land, and money, but it also fills up landfills, which emit methane. And if food waste were a country, it would be the largest greenhouse gas emitter behind the United States and China. So I want to talk about some places. There are some places in the world that are doing good and that are making progress and putting out initiatives that actually make total sense to me. Mm-hmm. In February 2016, France became the first country in the world to prohibit supermarkets from throwing out unused food through unanimously passed legislation. And now supermarkets of a certain size must donate unused food or face a fine. And other policies require schools to teach students about food sustainability, companies to report food waste statistics in environmental reports, and restaurants to make takeout bags available. Now, I'm wondering if you wanted to comment on maybe other initiatives you've heard of.
Yeah. Well, that thing in France made me think of here in Vancouver. I'm on disability myself, so I go to Quest Food Exchange, mm-hmm. and they have several locations around Vancouver and Surrey and stuff, and they accept donations from food suppliers of surplus products, and then they sell it back to low income people on welfare or disability, mm-hmm. for reduced prices. And it is, their slogan is redistributing quality surplus food, reducing hunger with dignity is their slogan. And I think that they've certainly helped me out a lot. And really, I mean, I would like to emphasize as well that for people who aren't particularly low income, or people who are, I mean, if you have access to a kitchen and groceries and you have time to do this stuff, vegan food, there's a misconception that it is more expensive and it's for privileged people, and that's not the case. Like, I know people who have gone vegan because they didn't have the money to buy animal products, dairy, exactly. and meat and stuff. But yeah, you know, we're talking about the situations where people might not have the income and the choice and the time to make those decisions.
I wanted to say too, I think that information and awareness and knowledge, that's a huge part of the issue too. I think a lot of people just don't know that vegan food can be really cheap, or they don't know necessarily where to buy certain things, or how to cook certain things, you know, how to maybe make their traditional foods but make vegan versions and that kind of thing. And I feel like that's where, if you're listening and you are in a position of more privilege, one of the ways that you can help is to kind of spread awareness about this, you know, to share recipes and share information, you know, that can help people to access these a little bit more. But yeah, there's lots of organizations around. I mean, I volunteer for the Vancouver Fruit Tree Project, which we go and pick fruit out of people's backyards in Vancouver, literally, and give it to people in need, because there's so much food growing in our backyards in Vancouver, and a lot of it goes to waste every year. So that program helps that. And I wanted to quickly mention Loopy Cafe as well. That's spelled L-U-P-I-I. They are a little zero waste vegan cafe in Vancouver, and they've done initiatives like free community dinners, and they get cast off produce from various companies, and they give it away for free to people who need it. So having programs like that, I think, is so helpful. And
We definitely need more initiatives like that. And actually, I'm involved in one. Speaking of, you know, I really believe in diverting resources and freeganism and paying it forward. Last week I raised $610, and this week some friends and I are cooking up 300 nourishing vegan meals, and we're going to distribute them in the streets here in the downtown east side. We're going to talk more about that later if you want to get involved.
That's great.
Thanks for the chat.
Well, dedicated to highlighting the power of podcasting is here, Vancouver. Join us November 8th to 10th for the Vancouver Podcast Festival, presented by Doxa Film Fest. Vancouver Podcast Festival tickets and passes are on sale now. Centered around a true crime, true justice theme, the festival includes nightly shows at the Rio Theater, a day full of masterclasses, plus live shows and panels at the Vancouver Public Library and CBC. To discover more about the festival, visit vanpodfest.ca/schedule.
100.5 means non-commercial, listener-powered, community radio. 100.5 means music, public affairs,
I have a dream,
and arts programming.
I wish I loved the human race. I wish I loved its city face.
You won't find anywhere else on the radio dial. 100.5 is not owned by a huge corporation. We are owned and operated by people like you, by your community. 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Find our complete program schedule at cooperadio.org.
Now for some events.
Yes, I'm going first, right?
Yeah. I want to hear what you were just talking about. Tell us about Dogwild.
I left you on a cliffhanger, but not like I haven't spoken about it on the show, because this is just a project that I just really, truly believe in. We call it Dogwild. That's the that is the acronym for A Day of Giving Within Arbitrary Borders. And what this was an initiative started by a fellow vegan activist, David Isbister, here in Vancouver, who you might know. He makes amazing vegan nourishing food, and this is a response to the fact that there are marginalized communities in our society here in Vancouver, and people are not having access to good plant-based nourishing food, and I think that's a travesty. So what can you do about it? You can get together, you can rally your community, and that's what we're doing. So as I mentioned, we've raised all this money. And it has gone towards purchasing food ingredients for a big cooking weekend. And we're also giving away a lot of personal hygiene donations. And thank you, Sinead, you gave me some stuff today to pass on, like toothbrushes and socks and things like that, that we'll be passing out. And the need for this weekend, if you are interested, the actual give is taking place on Monday, November the 12th at 4 p.m. We need people to help with cooking this weekend. It's going to be fun. It's lots of fun in David's kitchen. That's on Saturday and Sunday. A little bit of food prep on Monday. And then we'll need people to help carry out the supplies, and we'll be heading down here to the downtown east side to give out 300 meals and all these personal items. I have to say, this is like just a very it's just a gratifying way to actually do something for your community, and a little goes a long way, right? This money was raised, and it's just like a couple of dollars per meal, and the meals are really yummy. So please come out if you can, and we're posting the Facebook event again on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Allison. And I'll just mention a couple quick things here. Tomorrow, Saturday, November 10th, the Peace People Project is hosting a zero-waste vegan potluck at Grandview Park on Commercial Drive. Bring a zero-waste vegan dish to share, so that's no single-use packaging and no animal products, along with your own plate, cup, cutlery, and cloth napkin. If you're new to vegan or zero-waste living and are just interested in learning more, you're certainly welcome to just come check it out and say hi and ask questions. So that's 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow at Grandview Park at Commercial Drive and Charles Street. More info on their Facebook page, Peace People Projects. And also, just in line with the theme of our show here, on Tuesday, November the 20th, the UBC Learning Circle is hosting a free online webinar called Food Insecurity Through Indigenous Perspectives. Speakers include local Indigenous dietitians and nutritionists, and they'll discuss a variety of issues concerning food security from an Indigenous lens. That's 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, November the 20th. You can sign up online for free at learningcircleubc.ca. If you have any animal-related events that you'd like to have announced on the show, you can send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Thank you for that, Sinead. All right, so moving on, now we're going to hear an audio clip featuring a young woman named Francesca Cheney from Brooklyn, New York, in the Bushwick area. She has a cafe. She's founded and owns a cafe called Soul Sips, with the goal of making healthy plant-based food available to low-income people in her community.
Francesca Cheney. I'm 21 years old, and I am the owner of Soul Sips Vegan Bevs and Bites. With Soul Sips, my goal is to create a space where people can be nourished physically and also spiritually. And what that looks like is providing accessible vegan plant-based food for people, and also making sure that the space is somewhere that is a safe space so everyone feels welcome and everyone can connect with each other. My mom is one of the people that created the grassroots in understanding eating plant-based for me. Now, for me, my whole thing was, how can I get this out to the community? Because this is happening in my house, but this is not happening in the rest of the neighborhood. Soulfoods came to me through actually juicing and making smoothies. I was working at an apothecary and I was able to just learn all of the different herbs and vegetables and plants that are good for the body, and I started juicing. So in the very beginning, I would do it for family and friends. And so I would have sister circles at my house, always bring out the teas, and I would cook a vegan meal as well. I would make drinks for my family as well. And then eventually it evolved to us like making juices and selling it at the shop that I was working at. And from there, the operation started to expand, so we needed a permanent location. And that's how we ended up here. We did pop-ups for a while, and now we're here. All of our bites and our beverages have 4 ingredients or less. Something it's nourishing, it's filling, it's delicious, and it's not expensive because we're not putting all that extraness into it. We have a sliding scale brunch every Saturday, and what that looks like is you can come in and you can get a full meal and a beverage for anywhere between $7 and $15. You pay what you can. I'm planning to spend the next 10 years just like putting Soulfoods on the map, like making it something that is normalizing accessible food.
Okay, that once again was Francesca Cheney of Soul Sips in Brooklyn, New York. Amazing young woman. I think she's only 22 and she's really moving and shaking over there. So next up, we're going to hear about Brenda Sanders, who's kind of a personal hero of mine. She is based in Baltimore and does a lot of incredible food justice work over there. I actually tried to get her on the show for an interview, but she's an extremely busy woman. This is Brenda Sanders.
Brenda Sanders. I am one of the co-founders of Thrive Baltimore Community Resource Center. I am currently doing vegan food justice work in Baltimore City. I grew up very low income, housing insecure, food insecure, very, very poor in the projects of Baltimore City. We had this saying, you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. That's a big part of this huge move towards plant-based eating and learning more about veganism. Like, I am tired of feeling the way that I do. I'm tired of being in the same situation that I've been in and, you know, that my mother was in and that her mother was in. And it's a lot about breaking the cycle. I've always felt like you can make a much bigger, more concentrated impact where you are. The folks who can relate to you, who you understand and who understand you, will be more likely to trust you, will be more likely to listen to you. Community can grow and expand and stretch out in great and beautiful ways, as we're learning here in Baltimore. You make much more of a difference when you start where you are. The work that we do here in Baltimore is centered around education, outreach, providing resources to people in marginalized communities in Baltimore so that they can make an easier transition to the vegan lifestyle.
Oh, my name is April Vivi, and as a collective, a part of Thrive, I made lavender lemonade, and it was from lavender that I grow in my garden at home, so I'm an avid urban gardener. Just the cruelty animals go through to be sacrificed for food is just not something I wanted to do.
I try to make sure that all of the food that I promote is affordable, first off, and which isn't that hard to do because plants, but also accessible, meaning it's foods that folks can get in their communities and that is relatable. Culturally speaking, what are the kinds of foods that speak to people from low-income, marginalized communities? I've been vegan for 21 years, and I just see this as a way of being in the world that allows us to be our best selves. And it's not the absolute answer to everything, but it is an answer to a lot of things.
Our group has been helping people think more about what they're eating and not harming others in the process.
The way that we're currently engaging with the planet, with the other animals that we share the planet with each other, with our own bodies, this is a sort of way of living in the world that can really address a lot of the imbalances, a lot of the injustices. So when people ask me why vegan, why promote veganism as a way of being, there are very few ways of being in the world where you can actually make a difference to the world on a daily basis. That's what veganism is for me, and that's why I promote it.
So that once again is Brenda Sanders from Baltimore, amazing food justice activist. Brenda actually just recently opened a restaurant in Baltimore called The Greener Kitchen. And at this restaurant, it's kind of similar to Francesca Cheney's cafe, Soul Sips. She it has the goal of, you know, making amazing vegan food accessible to lots of different communities. So anyway, I just wanted to showcase a couple of people who are doing wonderful food justice work. We've had a couple other people on the show in the past who are doing similar things, and I think it's just so important to highlight the work that they're doing and how they're bringing vegan food and a vegan lifestyle and all this knowledge and information to communities that otherwise might have difficulty accessing it. Sinead, did you have any thoughts on this?
Just that I think it's great.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, it's great to hear about more of this stuff going on around the world, and especially in places that, again, as advocates of veganism, then we get people saying a lot of the time, you know, oh, well, you know, what about people in these places and what about people in these situations? Mm-hmm. And they're totally valid questions. It's just great that people are, that like this is being addressed and this is something that's being worked on.
For sure. I agree. For our listeners, I highly recommend following both of these places and both of these people. Brenda Sanders, If you can follow her restaurant, The Greener Kitchen, on Facebook or on any other social media, they post all kinds of amazing food. And Brenda actually also co-organizes Vegan Soul Fest, I think it's called, in Baltimore. It's like a vegan soul food festival, among many other things. Like I said, she's a very busy woman. And Francesca Cheney, young entrepreneur, you know, just doing all kinds of beautiful work. So yeah, definitely worth following. So why don't we move on to the news?
Yeah, well, first I'll remind everybody that you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. And yes, there's a lot to go through in the news this week. But first, CoverGirl has just announced that they are officially cruelty-free certified by Cruelty Free International, meaning none of their products or ingredients are tested on animals, nor are those of the brand's suppliers. So CoverGirl is now the largest makeup brand to carry a cruelty-free certification, and their parent company, Coty, has committed to making all their brands free from animal testing by 2020.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I couldn't believe that when I heard that about CoverGirl. I never thought I'd see the day.
Unbelievable. It's great. They said on Instagram that all their products that are currently sold on shelves are cruelty-free, and the brand doesn't sell in China, and so that's a concern for a lot of animal advocates, because in China they actually require animal testing by law for a lot of things, which is absurd, but CoverGirl doesn't sell in China, so there you go. And Yeah, so this news comes after Bill S-214 passed through the Senate last June. Bill S-214 would ban animal testing for cosmetics in Canada. And so it passed the Senate in June. It's now awaiting approval from the House of Commons. There's a lot of people going around saying that it passed already and it's all done, but it's not all done. So it's important that we keep the pressure on onto government officials that this bill gets passed. And so to learn more and to write to your MP, you can visit animaljustice.ca, and they've got a form that makes that easy. So until the bill is passed here in Canada, the best way to help animals suffering in labs for cosmetics is to choose cruelty-free products, such as apparently now CoverGirl. And but you can visit leapingbunny.org to search a big list of other beauty products, health products, and all sorts of things. And
yeah, that's so amazing. I do want to say really quick, it's such a great step that CoverGirl has taken. It's so incredible. I think that the label cruelty-free can be a little bit misleading, because what that means, what it's generally understood to mean, is that the product is not tested on animals, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't contain animal products, right? So obviously there is cruelty involved if there are animal ingredients in the product. However, if that is a concern for you, if you're vegan, you want to be vegan, it's still important to, you know, check ingredient lists and that kind of thing, just to make sure that the ingredients are free of animal products. Yes. However, it is a huge step for them to stop testing on animals.
Absolutely.
So
yeah. In other news, there was a study out of Oxford this week, Oxford University, that concluded that putting a tax on meat would result in a global increase in healthcare savings and subsequent decrease in death rates. This research was published this week in the scientific journal PLOS One. The study revealed that a 20% tax on unprocessed red meat and 110% tax on processed red meat, like bacon and sausages, in wealthier nations would result in an annual savings of $170 billion in healthcare costs, saving more than 220,000 lives worldwide each year. And they're talking about smaller taxes in poorer countries, but wealthier nations such as Canada seriously need to reduce animal product consumption.
Well, and that's when they're talking about all the lives that will be saved. That's human lives, right?
That's
we're
human
not even
lives.
Looking at animal lives. So.
Yeah, and that's not even talking about the environmental impacts, because, in May, major analysis of the damage livestock does found that avoiding meat and dairy products is the single biggest way to reduce your environmental impact. Last month, scientists reported that huge reductions in meat eating are essential to avoid dangerous climate change, including a 90% drop in beef consumption in Western nations. And diets are changing. More than half of Canadians say that they want to eat less meat, according to a recent survey. So that's something. But yeah, we really need to push this. So Marco Springman, who is the lead researcher of this most recent study at University of Oxford, explained that when it comes to public health, meat consumption is not a personal choice, as healthcare costs are often covered by taxpayers. So he says nobody wants governments to tell people what they can and can't eat, but this personal, quote-unquote, personal consumption decision really puts a strain on public funds. It's not about taking something away from people. It's about being fair. And so, of course, what he doesn't address is that, obviously, animal product consumption is inherently not a personal choice, because you're literally eating part of someone else's body. Mm-hmm. But, recent reports also this week that 60% of wildlife has been decimated over the past two generations of humanity. You know, number one cause, loss of habitat, deforestation. And what's the number one cause of deforestation? Animal farming. So between the healthcare costs, the environmental costs, and the cost to both farmed and wild animals, it's time to stop telling ourselves that animal product consumption is a personal choice. Mm-hmm. And also in the news, there was lots of people were talking about the U.S. midterm elections. There were a couple of motions that went ahead that involved animal welfare. In Florida, The passing of Amendment 13 means that commercial greyhound racing is now banned in the state. And so that's great, because that was a huge problem there. They were reporting dogs being found with cocaine and stuff. It was awful. So it'll be phased out over the next 2 years. And in Canada, betting on dog racing is not permitted, but dog racing is still legal. There's also some news from California, but there's no time to get to that right now. But I would advise you to just educate yourself and look into Proposition 12 a little bit if you can. So there you go.
Great. Thanks so much, Sinead. All right, moving on. My guest today is Matt Noble, Volunteer Executive Director of the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank in Toronto, Ontario. Matt and co-director Kimberly Carroll were among the nominees for this year's Lisa Grill Compassion Award in Toronto for their work with the food bank. Hello, Matt, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
For sure, thanks for being here. So first of all, tell us about the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank. What is your mission and what do you do?
Our slogan is that we provide healthful, eco-friendly, cruelty-free groceries for people in need. You can kind of break that down into two sub-missions if you want. One you could just say is alleviating poverty, and the other one you could say is serving sort of a marginalized veg community in the food bank system. So the first issue is the bad poverty. I think a really important thing that I like to try to get across to people, I don't know what it's like in BC, I'm sure it's pretty similar, but in Ontario, the welfare rate maxes out at $720 a month. So I just saw a basement apartment in my neighborhood for $2,200. That's probably on the higher end of things, but a large percentage of the people who come to food banks are getting some form of social assistance, either OW, which is welfare, or disability. So we actually just got a new government here, too. The Liberals had planned to increase welfare by about 3%, and that was going to be the second time in 25 years that it was equivalent to inflation. So every time they raise welfare rates, it's less than inflation, so poor people get poorer. So it was only going to be the second time, but the Conservatives reversed it. So they got that increase, but it was only $10 or something like that, less than inflation. So there's just that extreme poverty. Most people don't really know that that people on social assistance are trying to live in big expensive cities on $700 a month. It's basically impossible. Another interesting thing too is just nuts kind of statistic that I heard recently is in terms of the housing waiting list in Ontario, 9 years ago, so 2009, right after the kind of global economic crisis, the wait list for social housing in Toronto was 700 people or something like that. And 9 years later today, it's 14,000.
Wow.
So that's a 2,000% increase. And I mean, I'm sure that's partly because of the recession, but the people if we have people who come to the food bank and some people are in housing, have social housing, and many do not. And it is beneficial. If you get into social housing, it definitely makes your life a lot less of a struggle, but they do have, it is nice if you can get that. But anyway, the wait list is, people say the wait list is 10 years long, but I don't know if they're basing that on the 14,000 people or the 700 back in the day. But so poverty is pretty nuts in Toronto. It's a lot of people too. I think it's one in every 14 people get some form of social assistance in Ontario, which is another mind-blowing statistic that I've heard recently too, thinking about that. So anyway, the poverty is out there. And so that's kind of that's the big issue. And then on top of that, you have, if you're vegetarian or especially if you're vegan and you go to a food bank, there's basically no options for you. So that's kind of why we started it the way we did. And so we're just trying to alleviate poverty, but also alleviate poverty for, vegetarians and especially vegans who they go into food banks. And I should say there's no, people who are running food banks are really awesome people and they're trying to do a good thing. So no one's trying to be a bad person and say, like, we don't want to help vegans or whatever, but there's just this overarching kind of, like, Western mentality at food banks. People donate stuff they would eat, which is, you know, most people aren't vegan or vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these things like people, you know, you want to give people who need help, like nutrient-dense food. So people think, oh, eggs are good and milk's good. Mm-hmm. I was talking to someone the other day about how persistent this soy myth is. You know, I've been, like, talked to in grocery stores, like in Costco when I'm getting soy milk for the food bank, and people are like, a girl said to me one time, she's like, you're getting soy milk for people? You could at least give them some dignity or something. And I'm like, wow. What are you talking about? Soy milk's awesome. I drink soy milk. I love soy milk. It's like the best milk, and it is nutrient dense. It's like a superfood. So then there's the vegan component. So we actually work out of a place called Young Street Mission. It's a Christian community center. We aren't, you know, a religious organization or anything like that, but they actually are generous enough to donate the space to us on the last Saturday of the month. So when I was talking to them originally about starting this and doing it, I was having meetings with, like, people at Young Street Mission and seeing if I could find space for us to do this. And they had the food bank manager for their food bank there, and I was explaining the problem. And he was like, oh, yeah, definitely people need this. Our vegetarian and vegan people totally need this. We have, like, no vegan food. So it's a real problem out there. Another little thing, too, is if you're vegetarian or vegan or anything in between, but, like, you don't... If a food bank has, like, it's serving 100 people in a day and they have 100 cans of, like, vegetables, like canned vegetables, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And you're vegan and you say, okay, can I replace, like, since I'm not getting the tuna and I'm not getting this and I'm not getting this, can I get an extra can of vegetables? But they want to help everyone get something healthy, right? And maybe that can of vegetables is the only healthy thing. So they don't let you, like, you know, swap things per se all the time either, right? So, you know, vegans are often... like left out in the cold. I mean, if people are vegetarian and they get eggs and milk and stuff like that, and they can eat that, and that's what they choose to eat, then, you know, they can eat a lot more stuff at food banks than a vegan can. So we're mainly looking out for the vegans and giving a little bit to the vegetarians too, and, you know, how even banks having dietitians and nutritionists and stuff, even helping people transition, which is cool. And one of the sort of latent effects that's part of kind of the intersectionalism of this food bank, just to throw out there and add on to the pile, is University of Toronto had, like, a proof report. It's called the proof report that they did, I think, last year. And they said in the report that someone who is food insecure costs the healthcare system twice as much money as someone who's food secure. So I think it was like $5,000 versus like $2,500 roughly, but that's just giving people a little extra money so that they can afford food, because people who need help and who are on social assistance, like, they're paying rent and buying food, that's it, right? And they're not doing anything, they're not going anywhere for the most part, and so there's that, and that's just giving them a little extra for food that's not, like, necessarily fresh whole foods that are healthy. I mean, there's probably even more of a difference between the 5,000 and the 2,500 if you're actually giving people really healthy food too.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because your website mentions that at least 50% of what is available at the food bank is fresh whole foods. I wondered, how do you go about sourcing these?
So we actually, in the first few years of the food bank, I did, like, a lot of research and talked to a lot of companies and whatnot, but there's the Toronto Food Terminal in Toronto, and it's where all the kind of wholesalers go, and we use this company called Gambles. They're just basically like the Walmart of wholesalers. They're one of the only companies that sells by the box, so they're when they're dealing with, like, other kind of, I guess, I don't know if the other people at the food terminal would all be considered wholesalers per se, but Gambles only sells by the box, whereas, like, other people sell individual items at the food terminal and by the box as well. Gambles is, like, just by the box. So on the one hand, everyone always comments on how awesome the produce is, because we always get it the day before the food bank, so it always looks really nice.
Cool.
Which is nice for people, right? I mean, it's nice to go to a food bank and, like, you're like, hey, look at this awesome food, this is really nice.
Yeah.
That never happens So we're sort of an anomaly in the food bank scene in that sense. But so we just grabbed that, and it was sort of part of the approach when we started. We just said, like, we're gonna do this. I mean, our budget really is probably more like 60%+ on the fresh stuff, if you consider like tofu to be a fresh food and things like that. But yeah, we said, I think 60% on like the produce, and maybe like a little on the tofu too.
That's
roughly
super cool.
So we've had, we also got our dietitian. So the first time we ever had a dietitian was Dr. Pamela Ferguson, and she just moved to Nelson, actually.
Yeah.
So we lost her last month, but that's cool. We have actually one of her former students, now one of her peers, is maybe going to help out, and we have an awesome nutritionist and plant-based culinary arts professor at George Brown. Amy Symington also helps out. She's also the wife of Nathaniel Erskine Smith, the Beaches MP here, who did the bill 246, I think, which like had the shark finning, and he's the young liberal MP dude who's vegan. Anyway, they're like a little power couple. So he's been in one time with Amy, but anyway, so Pamela, my point was going to be that Pamela has done did a walkthrough originally, right? And we just said, here's what we're doing, here's what we're giving people, here's this much of this, this much of this. And she walked through, and she was like, this is a great little balance of food you got here for people. So we basically kind of stuck with it. We tweaked it a lot at first. So we kind of found a nice balance, and we sort of basically offer almost the exact same thing every month to everybody. So everyone, there's the odd changing vegetable, like if something super expensive because of like a drought somewhere or something, we're not going to pay like a ton of money, right? But excuse me, it's generally quite similar to the offerings that we provide, and that's just so everyone gets the same thing, no one feels like they're missing out, and everyone's getting sort of a healthy kind of rounded option.
That's great. Yeah, that's so great. I wanted to ask you more about that too, because your team includes dietitians, nutrition experts, as well as animal advocates and vegan lawyers and everything. I was just wondering what role do each of these folks play in keeping the whole operation running?
Well, everyone works really hard. Everyone's just awesome. I sometimes think it's kind of funny that I feel like I kind of get the most out of the food bank than anybody from starting it, just because, you know, I've been surrounded in so many amazing people and such a wicked team of volunteers and core team and directors and stuff. So yeah, we have a motley crew. If you like look at the board of directors, that's just myself and Nick and Kimberly. So Nick Wright is one of our directors. He's the he's like our lawyer. He's a small business lawyer. He did a lot of the helping getting us going, and now he's sort of my go-to. I call him and I'm like, what about this? What about this? What's this mean? And whatever. I do a lot of that myself. I deal with the government myself and call people, but I just always mix my kind of quick call. And he's a lawyer, and he's also, I don't think I just said this, but he's also the founder of Animal Justice as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So we got a lot of overlap going on there. Nick's the founder of Animal Justice and a director, and Kimberly is the Animal Justice media communications strategist, and she's also an Animal Justice director. And Kimberly was also one of the founding directors of MFA Canada when it came to Canada 10 years ago or something like that. She was involved in all the undercover investigations that ended up resulting in getting rid of gestation crates and battery hen cages and all of that kind of stuff. So Kimberly's a force, and Nick's a force too, so I'm lucky to have them on my side. And our newest director coming soon probably is going to be my sister, because she's just been at the food bank since the first day and basically just has been there forever and does everything. If I can't do something, or if I were to go missing or something, she would basically fill my shoes. But
cool.
So we're gonna bring her on in case something happens to me or something one day. I'm starting to think about this kind of stuff now that I'm getting older. and she's a school teacher, and Kimberly Carroll's also a body mind spirit coach. So we have a huge range. We have volunteers who use the food bank. We have people who are bond brokers. Everyone kind of brings their own thing, but ultimately we all sort of just want to help people, and we're mainly all vegan, most of us. I mean, like, there are people, we definitely have volunteers that aren't vegan. We have some key volunteers who are vegetarian, and some that are neither, but largely we're vegan, and largely, like, the core team and the board of directors is all vegan, and the core team is all vegan as well. Lots of vegans.
That's great. So what advice would you have for people looking to start vegan food banks in other cities?
So this is a really kind of interesting conversation, and part of what's cool about starting this food bank is it's kind of novel. I think Sam Simon, the Simpsons guy who died a year or two ago, I think he had a vegan food bank in California somewhere, like Malibu or something. I'm not sure, but he that's the only other one like I ever heard of. So I've gotten calls from, like, people in other countries and, like, people in the United States and people in Ontario and Vancouver and whatever, and it's great getting to talk to everybody. But I think the interesting thing is just that you have to do it. It's contextual. It might not be the same everywhere. It might not be a vegan food bank everywhere. Toronto is arguably the most multicultural city in the world, which means we have, like, a large Hindu population, a large, like, Buddhist population, a ton of vegan activists. And that's just another little point, too, about our food bank is, like, you know, we're trying to help alleviate poverty by helping with food, and especially the vegans who are kind of marginalized in the food bank system. And there are a lot of animal rights activists who come to the food bank too. So it's we're supporting kind of our animal rights army in that way, mm-hmm. as well. But to get back to the kind of contextual point, I've talked to people who say, like, you know, they're doing a fundraiser and they want to start a food bank and they want to raise money to pay for, like, rent and have, like, an event space and do all this stuff. And it seemed sort of, like, a little unorganized to me, and they hadn't talked to, like, the community and, like, other food banks and other organizations and seen where they could fit in, right? So they were trying to do a lot of stuff, and then, you know, maybe it's a smaller town where there isn't a huge veg population. I've talked to one person one time from a volunteer coordinator at a food bank, and she was just trying to make her food bank more vegan, the one she's at, right? Yeah. So we have, in Toronto, we have the volume, and we have, like, the multiculturalism and all, like, a lot of, like, animal rights activists and stuff like that. So there's the need here, in the sense of that it's just such a big place, and there's so it's so multicultural and so diverse, but that might not apply everywhere. And so you might do it someone might do it their own way. They might try to, like, volunteer at a food bank and make it more vegan. They might want to do some grassroots stuff with, like, activism for, like, raising, like, welfare rates or something like that, which I'm going to be doing a lot more of in the future now that I have a little bit more, I'm starting to have a little bit more time. But yeah, there's, like, different ways you could advocate for housing. Housing and food are always the two main things. If someone doesn't have housing, it impacts their food budget. If someone doesn't have food, it impacts their housing budget. So those are kind of, like, the two main things. And yeah, I just say, like, get into the community and kind of, like, find where you want to go. Like, for me, you know, the food thing was a good way of helping people and, showing, being an example that, showing people that you can help people in need without hurting animals, and that, in fact, you know, a healthy plant-based vegan diet is actually better for a lot of the chronic health conditions like cancer and heart disease and diabetes that are all exacerbated by poverty.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Like one good example, for instance, like, if say someone could only raise $1,000, right? One of the things we're looking at doing is potentially this winter is doing, like, a meal for out of the cold, which, I don't know, I just roughed it out in my head that it maybe would cost, like, $1,000 to do, maybe probably less, but maybe $1,000, $500 to $1,000 to do, like, an out of the cold meal one night, like a 4-course meal for 200 people. Right. So you mm-hmm. could just do that. You could just do, like, a vegan meal for 200 people one day or something with an organization or with something that already exists. So anyway, be creative and get to know your community and see what the need is. And, you know, it might not be a full on vegan food bank. It might be something different, or maybe it is a vegan food bank. Who knows?
Awesome. Yeah, well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of time now, but Matt Noble, thank you very much for joining us on Animal Voices today and for sharing your experience and insights.
Thank you so much for having me, and I will end by saying you guys, all of you guys in British Columbia, make sure you guys go out and vote for electoral reform this week.
For sure. Thank you.
No problem.
Cool. If you'd like to learn more about the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank or to make a donation to their work, visit their website at tvfb.ca. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, November 16th at noon. Next week's show will feature an interview with Desiree Nielsen, a plant-focused registered dietitian here in Vancouver. Once again, today's show was brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series designed to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, help chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/animalvoicesvancouver, and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Now we'll leave you with a song. This is Maceo Parker and his band live in Paris with Pass the Peas. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Yeah, we came all this distance just to tell you this. Past peas, past peas, past peas, or like we used to say, past peas, past peas, past peas, or like we used to say, past peas, past peas. Past the peas, unlike we used to say. Past the peas, past the peas. What? Kill them! Pass them then.